The mix of science, history, and high-concept adventure is always first rate in a James Rollins novel. Certainly true in his latest, The Demon Crown. Why, you ask? Well, because there are killer wasps in the mix. You can't beat that. And don't forget the bones of Alexander Graham Bell. They're there, too. The Demon Crown is the 13th Sigma Force novel where Rollins combines factual historic intrigue surrounding the Smithsonian Castle and innovative scientific concepts regarding the dark matter of life to deliver one of the most terrifying entries in his Sigma Force series. James Rollins is a number one New York Times bestselling author, and his books have been translated into more than 40 languages. The latest is The Demon Crown. It is published by Morrow, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James Rollins to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Good to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Well, so this is a fun book. What brought you to this idea?
Oh, actually, it came about because I've always got my antenna up for those that next idea, and I have some contacts in various governmental agencies. I have a contact in DARPA, but I got this actually from a dossier from Homeland Security, and it listed the top 10 concerns of Homeland Security, and the usual suspects were there, chemical attacks, nuclear attacks, but there's something that surprised me. It was in the top five. And it was their concern about invasive species. Now, we've all, heard about the pythons that got loose in the Everglades. And just recently there was an article about a 17-foot-long python that was discovered in the Everglades. Or Asian carp that have invaded our lakes, causing great harm to our native fish populations. Yeah, but these are accidental contaminations. What keeps Homeland Security up at night is what if a hostile foreign power should weaponize such a species. We have great ability to genetically modify, genetically edit species nowadays, and their concern is what if somebody manipulates something that's quite dangerous and releases it across the U.S.? Mostly because we have no way of guarding against it. The threat can come from many different directions, and as we sort of saw with the pythons and with the carp, once something like that is established in the environment, it's almost impossible to get rid of. So that's something I want to sort of shine a light in. And, in this book, we explore that. What would that look like? What would, if a hostile power released something really dangerous in the U.S., how might we combat it, if we can combat it?
So when we look at facts versus fiction, is... What do you see here that would keep us? There's a lot of concerning things here, but what is actually real? What is something that Homeland Security would say? Oh my God, we have to look out for this.
Right. What struck me as curious when I read that is why does it make the top five? Is there something Homeland Security knows that they're not telling us? Do they know, or do they have information about something like this going on in a lab somewhere in some secret lab at some corner of the world? Or are we doing something like that ourselves? How did it make the top five amongst all the other threats that this nation faces, that they should be concerned about somebody, trying to do a biological attack using a genetically modified species?
Okay, so in this series and in this story, it's very exciting and there's a lot going on. So when you put it together, what is that balance of fact and fiction in the sense of how you want it to be believable and yet you also want it to just be a fantastic story as well?
I try to ground it as much in reality and in real science as I can. Then I'm going to extrapolate. I'm going to see, where is that headed? What might that look like? How might that challenge us? I was just at a book signing yesterday, and there was a physicist walks up and says, "Hey, I've read a lot of scientific thrillers, and notoriously I'm rolling my eyes continually as I read a novel. But I've read your novels, and I have to be honest with you, it convinced me. I don't know how much of it was real, how much wasn't, but it seems like it's pretty plausible to me." And at the end of all my novels, I do have a what's true, what's not section where I do pull aside the curtain and I do sort of say, this is what's real, this is what's not. And if there are at least some breadcrumbs for people to follow, so if there's any topic I raise, whether it's the history or the science they want to follow themselves, I leave some clues for them to pick up. Because to me, one of the greatest compliments I get as a writer is, I love to hear when someone says, "Hey, I was reading your book last night, it kept me up late at night." But the greater compliment is when someone says, "Hey, I closed the cover of your book last night, but I was really intrigued by this part of the story, and you left those clues, and I went on the internet and searched it." because then I know the book worked more than just popcorn entertainment, that there was something, some resonance, some mark that was left upon that reader on that matter. So that's, to me, one of the greatest compliments I get as a writer.
Do you think this is one of the most frightening books you've written?
Well, I think it's probably one of the creepiest. Again, we're dealing with this this entomological threat, this threat from insects. And again, one of my resources for this was a set of scientists that posited that what truly led to the demise and extinction of the dinosaurs was not just the asteroid, but the asteroid just compromised these dinosaurs, and it was actually insects that dealt the final, death blow to the dinosaurs. And at the very prologue to my novel, I posit the question: what's the most dangerous animal in the world? Well, the most dangerous animal in the world is the mosquito. The mosquito causes millions of deaths every year, so they are a big threat. And then, of course, me being begs the question: who's the latest competitors for the Earth's dwindling resources right now? And that's us. Might not we not be a target for them at some point to get rid of, so that they can so we're no longer competing with them? And it's something that's fun to play with. How much of it, will that actually happen? Don't know. But if Homeland Security is interested in on these threats, what if somebody does weaponize an insect? They're already pretty clever, insidious little critters at getting around any blocks we put in front of them. Right now scientists have noted that they can prove that evolution is occurring. They've seen it occurring in mosquitoes. We've seen, these different insects that develop insecticidal resistance. So it's a why not?
Why not, indeed? So the idea, I asked the question about being frightening, and you're talking about the insects, which is just, it is creepy, isn't it? We don't like to think of that. I think that's a natural revulsion that many of us have.
In this book, I write scenes actually from various versions of this wasp, because I had basically five entomologists on speed dial when I was writing this novel, to the point where they're probably like James Rollins, Lose Our Number. I wanted to actually write scenes from the point of view of the wasp. What is it like to be one of these creatures? How clever are they? How much do they function? What is swarm intelligence actually like? And so I want to try to capture that as much as I can on paper. And from some people's early reactions, apparently it's pretty creepy.
So what gets you into the mind of a wasp? How do you do that?
Again, I talked to those entomologists, and it's interesting about hive intelligence and swarm intelligence and the way that these insects cooperate and the way they communicate. They communicate via pheromones. They communicate versus sound. They have a hierarchy. They have a certain structure. They have, wasp and bee colonies have, different drones have different functions. And how do they interact? How do they, what's their strategy to survive if they're threatened? So those are all things I like to explore when I was in those points of views of those wasps.
But that's different of knowing what their habits are to actually having them convey a message.
Right. I don't have my wasp, talking or breaking out into song.
Okay.
Any part of the story. I try to say as factual as I can in regards to what it means to be one of these creatures.
Your wasp to English, English to wasp dictionary.
Exactly.
don't need that. You said why not, but also what if? And you like that. This is something that you really have discovered from the very beginning of your writing career of that idea of what if.
Right, and that's where I usually start with most of my novels. Is I start with that what if, what if this happened, and what might that look like, and how might that challenge us? I always say, I'm always interested in the cogs and the wheels of technology, and I can build, I can use those cogs and wheels to build a big roller coaster, and make it an exciting adventure. But to me, sort of the more interesting aspect of technology and science is, how is that challenging us? How is it challenging our morality? Is it okay to genetically edit a baby? What about cloning? Should we be cloning humans? What about harvesting organs? Should we be growing organs based upon someone's DNA? It's that type of challenge. It's also fun to play with a novel besides these roller coasters I can build. I also like exploring, how's that going to challenge us as a human species?
And we are a very challenged species, aren't we? I mean, you get that idea in the novel. We got a lot coming at us.
And it happens fast. That you know, technology changes very rapidly. You know, that's why I like to call scientists like those entomologists, and I like to say, "Hey, look over your shoulder. Tell me what you're working on right now," because I want that. I want that immediacy. I found that oftentimes when I'm writing these, to sort of, you know, try to be as ripped from the headline, so to speak, as I can with the science. But the science changes, and so I've had to edit novels on the fly as the technology has changed. I wrote a book called Bone Labyrinth that dealt with the fact that at that time, the United States was the only one of the only Western countries that was still doing research, medical experiments on great apes. And so in my book, I had a great heated conversation about whether we should be doing that or not amongst a couple of my characters. By the time I finished the novel, the U.S. ended up banning that research. So I had to go back and change that entire conversation because it was no longer pertinent. So I tried to stay as cutting edge as I can. I just tried to, you know, get my information right from the horse's mouth, so to speak, so I stay as current as I can. And oftentimes get insight that, like I mentioned before, that they may have never published, things that are mysterious and new.
Talk a little bit about Sigma Force, of how that idea came about in your novel.
Well, Sigma Force, they're a group of former Special Forces soldiers. They were drummed out of the service for various reasons. But because of special abilities or skills or intelligence, they're recruited by DARPA, the Defense Department's Research and Development Agency. And they're secretly recruited, retrained in various scientific disciplines to basically field agents for DARPA. Then they protect the globe against various emerging threats. As I basically call them, they're scientists with guns. I discovered that group when I wrote the novel Sandstorm. I thought that was going to be a standalone adventure like all my previous adventures were. But I liked that group. I liked they were an intriguing group. I liked the fact that I can dabble with different sciences. I liked that the series is based on a group rather than an individual because at this point, you know, everybody's at risk. Because I can knock off a major character because Sigma Force can always recruit a new member. So nobody's safe. Once they discover that it's sort of fun to play with a group versus an individual in a series, I was ready to go ahead and begin book one of that series.
But you do have some protected characters, right? I mean, there's some as readers, we don't want there's some. People
I don't know.
Who, really?
I don't want to say it. There's some surprises in this book.
Okay, no, I know, but I'm asking from readers' point of view. They must write you and say, "Oh, please don't knock off so and so."
Oh, well, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I've faked out some deaths where it looked like somebody was going to die, and
yeah.
I got some heated emails about that response, even though I knew that that person's demise was not permanent, so to speak.
It was all a dream, after all. The new novel is
exactly.
The Demon Crown, a Sigma Force novel. It is published by William Morrow. James Rollins, congratulations on the new work. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I hope you have a lovely holiday season, and I appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, Joe.
And to you. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Demon Crown, a Sigma Force novel. It is published by William Morrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.